It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Arash Madani guest hosts Primetime Sports for Bob McCowan. Don't tell Bob, but it's now all tennis talk all the time. This is Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Okay, not all tennis talk. No chance the guy, my co-pilots, are going to approve that. It's Tuesday, the 30th of August. This is Primetime Sports. I'm Arash Madani, in for the vacationing Bob McCowan. Man to my left, Chris Johnston, the bearded one. I haven't seen you in a long time. When did the scruff start to grow?
I think it started to sprout while you were in Rio.
There you go.
You haven't seen it. But I must say, it is a pleasure to sit beside you. It feels like the adults left the keys, and we're taking the studio for a test drive right now. So,
and where are we headed? That's the question. The good news is that we're not headed where Teddy Bridgewater is going.
This must upset you.
Yeah, so you and I share this in common, that because we cover sports for a living, the fan in us has basically been beaten out. But we still have our National Football League team that we root for. And we can openly root for it because I only cover the NFL 1 week a year. That's the Super Bowl. The Vikings will never be in the Super Bowl, so there's never a conflict of interest. And you're a Cowboys guy. And now in the last 72 hours, what else can you do but laugh? Both our teams have lost their quarterbacks. How'd you handle the Romo news?
I wasn't happy about it. Because the worst thing that... I mean, look, I'm not going to complain about my lot in life. I guess I've sort of chosen this in a sense, although it's been something that I've been with for a long time. But whenever anything happens to the Cowboys or to Romo specifically, my phone just blows up with people enjoying that. So that kind of ticked me off. But you know, I feel bad for Tony because he's had a tough go of it injury-wise, and obviously I'm a little concerned about the season now and that it's going to be another wasted year. Fortunately for him, it sounds like something – that isn't so serious, whereas the Bridgewater news, you know, we probably shouldn't joke about, because based on the tweets, it sounds like, you know, there could be a serious situation going on there in Minnesota.
Yeah, it's a wild one. For those who are unaware, Teddy Bridgewater, the starting quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings, in a non-contact drill this afternoon, went down, grabbing his left kneecap. Players immediately started to swear, gather, pray. Eric Hendricks, one of their linebackers, threw a helmet. Practice was canceled. An ambulance showed up on a non-contact drill to take him reportedly to a trauma unit. The Vikings are going to have a press conference in an hour to discuss the situation further. I've been around football on both sides of the border, been to practices on both sides of the border. You stop practice when there's lightning, and you stop practice when it's over. If somebody gets hurt on the 20-yard line, then the trainers deal with them at that 20-yard line, and you just go down to the opposite 20-yard line, work on your red zone there. It speaks to how popular Bridgewater is, but perhaps it speaks also to the severity of the injury. And in a league with non-guaranteed contracts, Joey Bosa, I understood why he held out. I understood why he wanted to get his. Because in a non-contact situation, this is what happens. Now imagine when you're flying around with live bullets. It's one of those deals where, you know, in most other leagues, depending on what contract you sign, in hockey, if it's a one-way or a two, your money's guaranteed, but not in pro football. And that's what makes this, on top of everything else, just so worrisome.
Well, and the biggest thing, too, is you don't want to jump to conclusions, but when you hear the unusual circumstances surrounding, you know, what seems to have happened here, I mean, it's hard not to have your mind and kind of wander to some places and wonder what possibly could it be that A, elicited that reaction from his teammates, and B, caused an injury when, as you mentioned, they're in a non-contact situation. And my goodness, with the season fast approaching now, the Vikings have all kinds of things to consider.
We have a lot of football talk. Clarence Hill from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, he's a Cowboys beat writer. He's going to join us. We'll talk about the Romo situation, the Kaepernick situation, and the National Football League. We'll also hear from Dominic Foxworth a one-time NFL player. He wrote something in The Undefeated, a piece on Kaepernick's decision to sit during the national anthem. John Paul Morosi will join us at 5 o'clock. Morosi was actually there today when Tim Tebow had his workout in front of, what, a dozen? Two dozen?
28, I think.
Big league scouts? So Morosi will join us. We'll talk some Blue Jays with him. What else is going on around big league baseball? Dawn Braid from the Arizona Coyotes. She was announced last week as the Coyotes' skating coach, becoming the first full-time female coach in NHL history. She'll join us in the 5 o'clock hour. And Greg Zahn, who needs no introduction, will be in here at 6 o'clock to talk Blue Jays. Where do you want to go? Dawn Braid or the Blue Jays? What's the story on your mind these days?
I'm between the two. I mean, obviously, I'm watching. I haven't missed a Jays game in weeks at this point, so I've been locked in with them. Although today, it's funny, I just thought of it when you mentioned Dawn Braid. I was down at the Leafs practice facility and watched Austin Matthews, who's just moved to Toronto full time, and got a chance to talk to him. But also saw Barb Underhill,
right?
Obviously, well known in Canadian circles for her work as a figure skating commentator, but she's been around NHL teams for a long time, including the Leafs, the Tampa Bay Lightning, numerous others. And I guess because she wasn't full-time, she didn't get the asterisk that Dawn Braid will get. But, you know, there have been a few females I was thinking that are prominent in the hockey circles, and it's good to see, you know, more and more of them getting a chance to do it on a full-time basis.
I think we're at the point now where only baseball in the four major sports, we don't have a female coach. Becky Hammon is Greg Popovich's assistant in San Antonio. Rex Ryan has an assistant special teams coach over there in Buffalo, and now Braid with the Arizona Coyotes. You know, the question then becomes who, at what point are we going to see perhaps a head coach, and whether or not that's a reality. What is the role of a skating coach on an NHL staff? What does the skating coach specifically do? Is it tailoring workouts for individual players? Is it getting there early and doing specific things as a part of your development program? What is it that a skating coach does, Chris, to your knowledge?
Well, it's a lot of one-on-one work from what I've seen. And you'd be amazed. I mean, I was in the last 5 years even of watching the evolution here of the NHL teams, the focus on skills such as stick handling, doing various things with the puck, and then skating in particular is skyrocketed. And, you know, I know in being around the Leafs a lot that you'll often see, if you get there before practice, a long session with Barb Underhill and an individual player working on the stride. Sometimes they actually film it in real time on an iPad type of thing and show it back, and they're working on stride and all kinds of different things. And, you know, I guess like any sport, you're looking to any incremental small improvement, even with elite athletes, can make a big difference. And there's a lot more focus, I find, on these things that you almost assume by the time a guy gets to the NHL, he's got figured out or he can do it well enough. Well, that's not the attitude of the way the teams work. And there's way more, specific jobs that people have to try to improve these skills and talents.
You ever talk to a player about that role, that coach, how they may affect them? Is it, you know, from a skating standpoint?
Sure. And a lot of them give a lot of credit. I remember, going back, who was the first one that I remember making a big deal of it. Well, I think of the name, though, that you know, these players, because, you know, much like you're referencing contracts in the NFL, I mean, the average NHLer, if we're not talking, you know, you separate the top guys, you only get a couple years probably, and they're all trying to extend their career as long as they can. And I think, you know, particularly for players on the bubble or young prospects trying to make the leap, that improving skating, I mean, there's such an emphasis on speed and skating in the NHL, the way the game's played now, that they feel that if they can make those improvements, that it gives them, you know, a better career, a better chance to compete, and ultimately a chance to make more money.
I wonder when we're going to see an NHL, a female on an NHL bench in an assistant coach role, or maybe even upstairs, you know, with the earpiece, if that's going to happen. We're seeing it in basketball. We've now seeing it, Rex Ryan hiring with the Buffalo Bills, if that's going to be down the road.
Can't be that far off, though. I mean, I'm a bit of an optimist, but I just feel, even looking big picture, I mean, the emphasis on stats you see that the NHL has, where there's just been a change. I think, you know, there's certainly some, some of the old guard around still, but there's a change in the way teams are viewing these things. And you know, I don't think it's that far off myself. I don't have the name for you, and I don't know the exact situation yet, but you know, I believe that this is just a start. I don't think that this is a one-off kind of token thing, that you're going to see a lot more of this sort of hiring being made in, you know, around the league.
I wonder what kind of development program there are for coaches. You know, and I don't know enough about this, but in the AHL, are there female coaches on staffs in the American Hockey League and in other minor leagues, in the ECHL and the IHL? Off the top of my head, and I'm not as connected with the CIS hockey scene as I once was, I can't think of a women's assistant coach on a men's program. Obviously, there are on the women's side. And in the CHL, in the junior ranks, are there any women on any of those staffs? I mean, I'm not aware of any
in any of the leagues you just mentioned.
Yeah. So
there might be, though.
So unless it's coming from a national team program, unless it's coming from USA Hockey or within Hockey Canada and somebody is hired, you know, if Tom Rennie gets back into the National Hockey League as a coach, as a head coach one day, and Rennie's now, of course, the executive director of Hockey Canada, I wonder if Rennie was working with a female coach, if he'd bring one of them on as an assistant. Something that we may find out. I just got a tweet. I played for Ryerson. We just hired our first female coach on our team this year. Chris Marchese. Thank you for that, Chris.
Just so happens that's a team that plays literally down the street from where we're sitting.
Yeah, the old Gardens.
We didn't even realize.
The Dallas Cowboys just placed Kellen Moore on IR. He was another guy on their depth chart. But the situation with quarterback this week is about the guy who's not playing but is active, unlike Tony Romo, unlike Teddy Bridgewater, and that's Colin Kaepernick. We have rarely seen an athlete make that kind of statement. Standing up by sitting down is how Dr. Harry Edwards addressed it. When you saw what Kaepernick did, what stood out to you? What was your initial reaction?
Well, I didn't become aware of it until the discussion had already ballooned basically yesterday.
Right.
And what stood out to me most is I can't believe, especially in the U.S., you know, where a lot of this is really driving sports news right now, how quickly the conversation went to Kaepernick himself, to the anthem, to basically everything but the issue he was trying to call attention to.
Right.
And that to me was a bit surprising, and very surprising, not even a bit surprising. And it doesn't seem, except in a few articles I read, including one we're going to have the gentleman on, Dominique Foxworth, to talk later this hour about it. But, you know, what jumped out to me was everyone wanted to talk about kind of all the peripheral stuff around this rather than really the point of what Kaepernick was trying to make. And, you know, I give Colin Kaepernick a lot of credit too, because it sounds like this is something he's been doing. He wasn't going out seeking any attention for it. And when he was asked about it, he met it head on. He didn't try to deflect, didn't try to downplay what he was doing. He was just open about his feelings. And, you know, I do think that it takes some courage to do that, especially in this league that you mentioned without guaranteed contracts, where his own situation isn't exactly secure. And, you know, he's choosing to make a larger statement, I think, than his current situation. I respect that.
Yeah, Kaepernick spoke for over 18 minutes, and he explained exactly what he was doing. We talked about this quite a bit on yesterday's program, but the issue is not going away, nor should it. Colin Kaepernick had a statement to make about a social issue that he wants to see change. And we so often ask professional athletes to use their platform for positive reasons. And Colin Kaepernick, the word he used was oppressed. And Colin Kaepernick believes enough in this that he's willing to potentially sacrifice dollars from salary and from endorsements about it.
Not to mention, a lot of people are coming out and criticizing him. I mean, he's taken a lot of heat for this.
Right. For 20 years, Clarence Hill has seen a lot of players go through a lot of heat, not quite like this one. He's the Cowboys beat writer for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. You've seen a lot of scandals, Mr. Hill, but nothing quite like this. And this has a totally different issue from a lot of the things you've seen. Why in your mind do you believe so much of the attention is on Kaepernick not standing for the anthem rather than the message that he's trying to convey?
Oh, well, because it's the anthem. And people just, you know, have an issue with the anthem. And certainly the issue of whether it's deemed unpatriotic. And certainly that's going to strike a chord with a lot of people. But, I mean, you know, clearly people are missing the message. And certainly they're missing the message of what the flag stands for. They think he doesn't have the freedom of speech or right to say what he wants to say. I mean, you know, and certainly no one wants to hear him out or have tried to hear him out when he, you know, talks about his respect for military. He's not pointing out the military. And certainly, you know, I know I've talked to people and I've retweeted stuff and read stuff from veterans who say, you know, they fought for your right to choose, your right to express yourself. You know, and that's what Kaepernick's doing and has done.
Clarence Hill, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. At what point do we start to listen? At what point does the issue of the anthem and the flag and the military give way to what Kaepernick's actually trying to say about wanting to get change? Or does it?
In this country, and certainly what's going on now with Trump and his rhetoric and people fired up about his divisive and racist rhetoric and not really seeing what he's doing, I don't know. I mean, it's scary. It's a scary time right now when people are not listening and they refuse to listen and are actually so much tired of people complaining that they're going the other way and closing their mind about the subject, and they don't want to hear, they don't want to listen, you know, and because it hasn't affected them. And so because it hasn't affected them, you know, it's not valid in their mind. And it's certainly a problem. And, you know, the thing about it is, as African-American, I mean, we support the police. You know, we all have friends and family who are law enforcement, you know, and good friends and family in law enforcement. We also have friends and family who have been mistreated, you know, by law enforcement. So it's a complicated thing. It's a complicated issue for everybody. And it certainly hits close to home for a lot of African-Americans because they do see the double standard. They do see people being targeted. They do see their racial profile. And whether you're a million-dollar athlete or you're somebody just a regular person on the street. And so those issues that affect a certain community doesn't affect other people. And that other segment, you know, has closed the blind eye towards it.
Clarence, have you been around the Cowboys here the last couple of days since all this has come out?
Yeah.
What's the discussion been like there then? Have you, I presume, the players?
I mean, I've talked to players, and I think that, you know, the problem that we have a lot of times that we put a mic in front of people's face and expect them to be profound or expect them to have an answer. You know, and everybody doesn't have answers. Everybody's not educated on the subject. You know, and I think that several celebrities have gotten in trouble. I mean, Rodney Harrison is in a firestorm right now for opening his mouth and saying some ignorant stuff. You know, just because you play football, just because you're black, don't mean you have a good opinion on the subject because you might not be educated on what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, talking to players, their opinions are evolving, you know, and their stances are evolving as they get more information about what's going on, about what he did, about his reasons behind it. A lot of people didn't know the reason behind it. They just stand up with a flag, so they make visceral reactions. And then as you understand what the method was, what he's trying to do, what he's trying to accomplish, and then you put it into context of your fans, your family, your own experiences, I know the players I've talked to, their opinions are evolving as the week has gone on.
So do you believe, and Clarence Hill joins us from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Clarence, do you believe that athletes today are still very apprehensive to take a social stand because
there's no doubt.
Yeah, it makes things uncomfortable in the building, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's the problem. And I was talking to somebody else about it, you know, it, football is a team sport, you know, and you, you know, if you look in, you know, it was funny because somebody asked Bill Belichick about it, and he's dismissed on the Cleveland. He doesn't want anything to come into that building.
Right.
It's not all about focused on what we need to do to win this game, and that's how it has been, has always is going to be as far as a football team. We don't want any distractions, whether you think it's valid or not. Our focus is we need every man in here focused on what we need to do to get prepared for practice and get prepared to play to win this game on Sunday and win a title. It's a singular focus, no outside distractions, no nothing. And you know, the funny thing about it is that's what always made football in a locker room a equitable environment, because it was always about how you play. You know, there's, you know, black players and white players and Hispanic players and whatever else have always gotten along because they had one common goal, one common focus. You know, in a situation like this, when an individual stands out and does something, right or wrong or indifferent, when other players have to answer questions about what you're doing, when people are asking and you're being asked about things outside that have nothing to do with winning the game, getting ready for the game, scoring touchdown, getting ready for the season, to coaches, to people in the building, that's a distraction. That's a no-no. That's a problem for the NFL, and that's why they try to shut all that out.
So then how do we get better? How does society get better if people who have this platform, who have this voice, are encouraged not to, are basically beaten into them that, you know, you do not disrupt the apple cart?
You know, the thing about it, I don't know, and I certainly there are some other men than me that have tried and tried to get this down. We shouldn't be relying on athletes and football teams to solve this problem. You know, number one, that's not going to happen. You know, they shouldn't be asked to do this. They have a platform and which can bring attention to it, but, you know, they're not prepared. They're not ill-equipped to speak and not that they're not smart, but it's just something they haven't studied. It's something they haven't spent their lifetime working on to try to solve this problem. And, we shouldn't be relying on those guys to try to solve this problem.
Clarence Hill joins us from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Okay, let's talk a little bit of football. The man to my left here, Clarence, is actually an unabashed Cowboys fan. And for those in Canada who are unaware, I mean, the Dallas Cowboys are the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Toronto Blue Jays and all your favorite teams. Put them in a blender, pour it out. That's the Dallas Cowboys' attention and hoopla on a daily basis. So when Tony Romo goes down again, Clarence, what is that? What does that do to the Metroplex in the Dallas Fort Worth area?
Oh man, it was shocking. It was the Cowboys' worst nightmare. I mean, you know, all the hopes and dreams of bouncing back from last year's 4-12 campaign. Even Jerry Jones talked about it, was the return to health of Tony Romo. He was going to get them back to that 12-4 year they had in 2014 and make them contenders again. And as the Cowboys franchise that has not made a been to the Super Bowl since 1995, the last year, their three Super Bowls. There are legions of fans and generations of fans that have grown up never knowing the Cowboys to be winners. And so, you know, it was a shock to the solar system. It was a punch to the gut, as Stephen Jones said. You know, imagine what the situation would be if they didn't have Dak Prescott. You know,
right.
There's still a flicker of hope. You know, there's a flicker of optimism. I know it's just preseason, but at least give them something to hang on to, that there's, you know, help coming, you know, whether it's this year or next year or in the future. But imagine if Prescott had not had the preseason he had.
Right.
I mean, people would be jumping off buildings right now. I'd say y'all would be jumping off a building right now. But at least the good news is they do have something to point to and something to rely on and something that's giving them hope.
Well, Clarence, I guess the natural next question is, you know, based on your experience, what should we read into, you know, really an excellent preseason that you mentioned for Dak Prescott, a rookie quarterback? I mean, what should be expected of this guy?
You know, as Bill Parcells said, you don't know what you don't know because you don't know. And what happened in preseason has nothing to do with the regular season, because the defenses will be more complicated, their intensity will be ratcheted up. But based on what you've seen, you have to like what you've seen. I mean, he's going against the same defenses that every other quarterback has gone through against in the preseason. All the top rookies, all the veterans, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, whoever you want to put out there, he's played as well as any of them. You know, and actually, he's been the best if you look at his numbers in the preseason. So that gives you hope. What also gives you hope is that you remember RG3 as a rookie. You know, he didn't fares the world later. But as a rookie, you know, defenses didn't know what he had. Just like he didn't know about the defenses, they didn't know about him, and it took them a while to catch up to him, and he had success. He also had a rookie running back in the backfield with him at the time, but Al Morris, who's now in Dallas. And, you know, and so the Cowboys have a rookie backfield with Ezekiel Elliott, but they also have a veteran like Alfred Morris, who's a three-time 100,000-yard rusher with the Redskins there. They have a strong backfield that they can rely on. They have the best offensive line in football they can rely on. They also have Dez Bryant back after injury play season, ready to dominate again. And, you know, those are all things that are working in Dak Prescott's favor. They're also going to, you know, tailor the offense. One reason why he's had success in the preseason is because they've tailored the offense to his strength. They do a lot of movement things. They do a lot of bootleg things. They're running the zone read or the read option that they did in college and doing things that make him more comfortable. So all of that gives the Cowboys hope. This offense was supposed to be Romo-friendly. It's supposed to have a strong run and take pressure off of Romo. It's also going to take pressure off of Dak Prescott.
Well, I presume you don't have a crystal ball, but can you see a set of circumstances that could unfold here where Dak Prescott plays well enough that you're talking about maybe stealing Romo's job before he's back healthy?
Well, I mean, it happened to Tom Brady and Drew Bledsoe. So, and people may not respect Drew Bledsoe now, but you know he had just gotten $100 million contract. Now, he had just gotten a big contract from New England. He was a number one overall pick. You know, so it wasn't just them replacing a bum with Tom Brady. But Tom Brady was playing so well that Bill Belichick had to make that decision. He stuck with Tom Brady. So, you know, I guess it can happen. The problem here, there are two things. You know, Tony Romo and the Cowboys are tied at the hip, you know, from a off-the-field wise. I mean, he and Jason Garrett are close friends, if not best friends, along with Jason Witten. You know, he and, you know, Jerry Jones or Stephen Jones are tight. And from a financial standpoint, they're tied with him. From an emotional standpoint, they're tied with him. And so they all want Tony Romo to put a bow on his legacy. He's the most prolific quarterback in Cowboys history. He just doesn't have a lot of playoff success. And they want him to end and finish his career on the right note. So all of that plays into this dynamic as they go forward with Dak Prescott.
Clarence, we appreciate the time, man. We'll be watching the quarterback situation there and the fallout from the Kaepernick situation. Thanks for the time today.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
We appreciate the time, man. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
All right, Clarence Hill from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
He made me feel a bit better.
The rookie quarterback who shows upside in the preseason can sometimes be the biggest danger, can sometimes be the glimmer of hope, and you just don't know until you know.
You just liked it when he was going to be the backup quarterback, when he was showing that in preseason, but he wasn't going to have to be relied on to win games for
But there's no pressure on him to win games right now. There was pressure on Tony Romo to win the division and get the Cowboys to the Super Bowl. Hey, kid, come on in. Do what you do. I mean, what have the Cowboys done over the years? They've thrown John Kitten out there and Brandon Whedon out there when Romo's gone down.
I've tried to block those games out of my mind.
And now they go with the kid for a team whose window's closing. It's going to be interesting. The Kaepernick situation just continues to be front and center. Dominic Foxworth, former NFL defensive back, is going to join us in a moment. He wrote a great piece on Kaepernick's decision to sit down during the national anthem. And he's going to give us an inside look on how not only his teammates, but other teams may perceive him. Could this lead to Kaepernick's release? We'll find out. From a guy on the inside next, as Primetime Sports continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
23 minutes before the top of the hour. This is Primetime Sports. These are the Tragically Hip. One of their real underrated albums, by the way. Track is In View. You went to one of their final shows, didn't you?
Yeah, the first Toronto show.
And?
It was ridiculously good. Especially given that kind of the challenge of having that tour and everything around it, putting together those shows. I mean, it's not a very easy task. And people went there, spent a lot of money, had a lot of expectations, and I don't know anyone who didn't exceed what they were hoping for from the night.
That's Chris Johnston. I'm Arash Madani filling in for Bob McCowan. What stood out to me of the entire tour and what Gord Downie did was the energy in which he expended every night going across the country. Just the level, just what that must have taken out of him physically in his state with the brain cancer, just wild. And I watched the final show in Rio at Canada Olympic House. And I thought it was a great Canadian moment. But it really, I don't know if we'll ever see a band like this again. You know, one that for two decades touched so many Canadians.
I don't think so. I mean, even just the whole music industry has changed
so much
in the 30-odd years since they've been a band and been touring. So it's hard to imagine any one band kind of capturing a moment like they had there.
It is game day in Baltimore. The Blue Jays will be facing the Orioles. John Paul Morosi from MLB Network and Fox Sports will join us at the top of the hour. Greg Zahn will be in studio at 6 o'clock. Marco Estrada was terrific last night. There were some people out there with questions. Has Estrada lost some of his stuff? Or should there be concerns with the back injury? He quieted a lot of those yesterday. Yarn Navarro, of course, everybody saw him back with the Blue Jays. Michael Saunders is in the lineup tonight. Justin Smoke is not. We will be talking more baseball as the show goes on. But first, we've talked so much about the political side of the Colin Kaepernick decision. Dominic Foxworth joins us. And Dominic played in the National Football League for a number of teams. And Dominic, we read what you had to say in The Undefeated. And I loved your lead, by the way. I am just as much an American as I am a Foxworth. Why don't we go and maybe Dominic Foxworth isn't there. What we want to talk to him about is what's it like to be a 49er right now? Forget Colin Kaepernick for a minute. There's probably at least 74 more guys because final cutdowns haven't happened yet. What's it like sitting next to Colin Kaepernick on each side? We're across from him in the locker room. What does this mean to the locker room? And I think that's one thing that really hasn't been talked about a little bit here is how does this affect everybody else?
I would have to think it's as polarizing, Rash, and obviously kind of guessing here, frankly, but as it's been in the reaction we've seen in the public in the U.S. And you know, there's probably some teammates that admire what he did, that he had the courage and things we've talked about, and there's no doubt some others that are going, man, season's coming up. This is what we're talking about. This is what's going on. I mean, that I'm sure it's engendered all kinds of different reaction from his teammates. And, you know, he's, again, it's bigger than its team. It's bigger than him that he's done it. But I'm sure living with this has been an interesting couple of days for Colin Kaepernick, especially in those close quarters you mentioned.
Dominic Foxworth played with the Denver Broncos, Atlanta Falcons, and Baltimore Ravens. He was never with the 49ers, but Dominic, we appreciate the time. What we're discussing here is we've talked so much about the political side and the message of the Kaepernick decision. What would it be like in the locker room today or yesterday in the aftermath of all of this?
I've been asked that question a few times, and it's the same in that locker room as it is in every other locker room. I mean, those guys are focused on their job. And one of the things that I often hear, and it kind of bothers me, is people talk about distractions. These are adults who have plenty of distractions in their life. And I feel bad even using the word distractions, but we have full lives with lots of things going on, and nothing is a real distraction. All these things that people think are distractions don't actually distract. Like, there are people who have family members on a team who are struggling through some difficult times or struggling with their health. And there are people who have pregnant wives, and there are people who have a ton of different things going on, and they manage to balance all that. But for some reason, people think that Colin Kaepernick's standing or sitting for a national anthem is going to distract these guys from a job they have to do. Either you're good at football or you're not.
In your career, Dominic, was there ever an issue, a matter, an incident that actually was a distraction that affected the collective in a room?
Yeah, I can't say that there was. I think that something that could happen is if someone done something to a player, or like I've heard about incidences where there have been the same love interest between one guy. Like those sort of things where there's actual real life day-to-day implications can hurt a team. And I think when issues like that and issues about the game. So when players, I've been on teams where players have been unhappy with decisions the coaches have made, when they've decided to start a particular player, and then there people kind of divide up amongst teams there. It's like, I want this guy to be our quarterback, or I want that guy to be our quarterback, or I don't like that coach always calls this defense or this play. Like those things, on the field things, definitely have the capability of distracting a team and breaking a team apart. But those things only happen when you're losing. When you're a good team and you're winning and that sort of stuff, like there's nothing that can distract from that.
Well, if his teammates aren't bothered, how do you think Colin Kaepernick's coaches and the management of the Niners probably viewed, you know, his decision, yeah, and everything that's come here in the last 48 hours or so?
Yeah, I'm sure they would rather not have to deal with it because they didn't get into football to have to contend with social issues. They want to win football games and make money. That's what they're all there for. But which is why I think it's even more commendable that Colin is willing to put all that stuff in jeopardy to put attention in a place that needs more attention than what's happening on Sunday. So I think that the coaches probably are annoyed by having to answer those questions, and definitely the owners and are frustrated by being associated with something that could hurt their bottom line. But I honestly don't think I think it's a slow time in sports, and we don't have much to talk about, so this is what we're going to talk about. I think once things get going, it will be an afterthought.
Dominic Foxworth joins us. Dominic, you've been around a lot of locker rooms, and the political scene in the National Football League with the non-guaranteed contracts has a lot of layers to it. Colin Kaepernick was on the bubble long before this even became an issue because of the nature of his contract and how it was structured and the mess of the quarterback situation over there in San Francisco. What in your mind would it take for a player to be released based on some kind of political statement, based on something that is non-football related, non-substance abuse policy related, right, and non-personal conduct related? What would it take for a player to get released based on something they may say or stand for?
Yeah, I think that it boils down to how good the player is, frankly. One of my college coaches told me a long time ago he told all of us on the team is, I may not treat you equally, but I will treat you fairly. And he said that to say that some people get treated better because they are better, and some people don't because they have less leeway because they are not as good contributors. So I think that holds true, and I think you can get away with a lot of things if you are a talented contributor. I think that issues with domestic violence and that have been in the NFL recently is a testament to that. And so I think that's what it boils down to. And I'm not sure that there's anything that anyone could say or do short of something illegal that would get them put off a team if they were a franchise quarterback.
Dominic, the piece you wrote at The Undefeated was very powerful, persuasive, honest about your feelings on this matter. I'm wondering, what have you made of sort of the wider conversation that seems to have happened where, to me at least, you know, sitting here in a different country but viewing it from afar, that there's been so much talk about Colin Kaepernick himself, about the anthem and what it means, and very little sort of about the message that he was trying to convey with his actions.
Yeah, I think that's the most disappointing part, is that we're focusing on that in a country that was founded on this type of activism. I've brought up the Boston Tea Party as an example of like
we were a British colony, and many of the founding fathers dressed up like Native Americans and climbed onto a boat and threw tea into the ocean because they were not happy right. with the government at the time. So, I mean, the idea that protest is un-American is just foolish, and that somehow protesting is not patriotic is ridiculous. But I am really disappointed, because whether it was the right way or the wrong way, I don't care. Like, I don't think that it was the wrong way, but I'm willing to concede that to anybody, that it was the wrong way, so that we can then move on to having the conversation about the racial inequality in our country. And I think that we're missing an opportunity if we're all going to debate and talk about Colin Kaepernick. I don't care. No disrespect. Like, I'm happy for him, and I root for him just as much as I root for anybody else, but I don't care about Colin Kaepernick. And I'm grateful that if he hadn't done what he did, I wouldn't have been able to write this piece. We wouldn't be having this conversation, and I wouldn't have been having this conversation on a lot of other shows. But I think that's the important thing, is that we don't dwell on whether he was right or wrong, but we move on to accepting that there are issues and working towards solutions.
And why do you believe that's taken such a backseat to all this? That the method is more than the actual message?
Because I think that some people are uncomfortable saying that they disagree with the message, even though they do disagree with the message. I think you could find plenty of Americans who think that African Americans have a fair chance and do not suffer from inequality. So I think fundamentally they disagree with it, and they're not looking to level the playing field. And rather than going at a debate about that, which they, I assume, know that they will lose, they would rather focus on a debate that they think they can win. And, well, you got to show respect to the flag, which I think I think they're wrong there. And I've been suckered into that debate too, but I don't care whether I'm right or wrong on that issue. The issue that I want to be right on, and I want us all to get on the same page, because no actual fundamental and impactful change will come about until the vast majority of the country believes that there is true inequality and has a desire to work towards solving it. And if we're arguing about whether the way that he administered his discontent was right or wrong, we never get to discussing the merits of his concerns.
Well, here's hoping that we will get to that point quite soon. Dominic, the piece is in The Undefeated. We appreciate the time, and we'll visit with you down the road.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, Dominic Foxworth. So out of all this, what do you make of it? You've been around locker rooms in different sports. What's the end game here? What's the short-term end game, and what's the long-term end game in your mind, CJ?
Well, I guess short-term, a lot of people, and this is not exactly speaking to what Dominic was just saying, are going to be focused on what happens with Colin Kaepernick, and does he remain a member of the 49ers into the season. Long-term, I kind of feel, as he alluded to early on there in the interview, that this will probably be something that is pushed aside relatively quickly and, you know, on to the next one type of thing. And it's not something I'm hoping for, but I just know sort of the way the news cycle turns and the machine of it all. And, you know, I still commend Colin Kaepernick for doing it. I think that he's at least started a conversation that wouldn't be having had. But, you know, I think that there's a lot more still to go in this.
The key thing here is let's just hope the message gets through, and we don't get too caught up in the method. It's something that will continue to be discussed in the days and weeks ahead. We have more sports to talk about. We have the Blue Jays to address. Tim Tebow had a workout in California today. The Arizona Coyotes have hired the first full-time female coach in NHL history. She will be joining us. Greg Zahn in studio. Mike Zeisberger is about to slide in. Chris Johnson, we appreciate it. Good to see you, man.
Thank you. The adults are back. If Zeis is coming in, that's good.
The adults are back, and our show continues. Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. We'll be back.